This is URN.
The Film Show Breakdown.
Hello everyone and welcome back to The Film Show. I'm joined this week just by Isaac.
Good afternoon.
And Joseph.
Hello.
And neither of them or myself had much time to prepare this week, so I set out a genre challenge for them to compete against each other in. The Battle of the Century. Joseph versus Isaac. It's what people have been waiting for this entire time.
You haven't really picked good things for me to win. Taking me out of my comfort zone, so it's all good.
I thought it would be a challenge because they're not what we normally talk about. We normally have to have excuses to talk about these kind of films. So the idea is they're going to recommend me a film to go with each of the genres I'm going to list out. Points will be awarded to whoever does the best for each genre. However, before they start, I will also be recommending a film. They cannot pitch the same film as me, so they can't recommend one that I choose. So if they have chosen the same one, they'll have to think of another answer off the top of their head.
Yes.
We're going to do it in three.
Can we just start with something else first?
You've got some news.
Film news first.
Yeah, of course. Go ahead.
I just want to pay tribute to two people that we lost on Saturday. Yeah. The great Fred Willard, one of my favourite comedic actors, was in one of my favourite comedies of all time in Anchorman. So, and in the like Christopher Guest films, sort of like the improvised films, he was so good at that, and he's a real loss to that and to the comedy film, and also to Lynn Shelton, a brilliant independent filmmaker who made an incredible film a couple of years ago called Outside In. It's one of my favourite films of that year, and that's on Netflix at the moment, so please, people, check that out, because she was an incredible filmmaker, and it's a great loss to the film industry. So, yeah.
Oh, very good.
That's the show.
Rest in peace.
Rest in peace. We don't often get a chance to actually show people out that have passed away.
It's really gutting when I found out.
I do remember hearing about Fred Willard.
Yeah.
Shame I haven't...
They just posted that brilliant clip of him on Twitter after it had been announced, and there was that clip of him at the beginning of Anchorman saying about how his son had got caught at the Catholic Church with porn. So we've all looked at that kind of stuff. Oh, well, you haven't. No, neither have I, yeah. it's a fantastic scene, and he's a great contribution to that film because he's so different to Ron Burgundy. It's sort of like a great contrast. It really works in that film.
It's been a long time since I've seen Anchorman.
I did it for a pub quiz yesterday. I did a film section, and Anchorman was one of the questions. It was, what are the office objects that Brick says he loves?
A lamp, carpet, and desk.
Yes.
I would not have got. Did you host the quiz?
No, I just hosted that section. I'll show you the.
I might be doing something similar with some people from uni. Did you win?
Cool. No. I was just one of the hosts.
Oh, you should have won. Should have entered and won.
Yeah.
Right. Are you ready for the battle?
Are you guys ready for the battle?
Yes.
Isaac versus Joseph, Dawn of Justice.
Right. Well, so, absolutely no preparation for this whatsoever.
if you have a better film, you might still steal it.
You've done no preparation. I've done too much preparation. It'll balance out.
Yeah. The first section is very broad, very deliberately, because we start out extremely broad with action. And the film I'm putting forward that you two can't is Mad Max Fury Road.
I'm glad I didn't.
Did you realise that I would also choose that one?
Well, I just thought you, because the whole thing is about recommending you something to watch. Yeah. You talk about it all the time, so no point.
Very good, very good. And hopefully you thought the same for horror, but we'll get to that in a second.
Yeah.
For 1 point each, if you win, recommend me something for action.
I'll go first.
Go ahead.
I'm going to recommend the first of a whole franchise of them, but I think the first one's a great one too. I start off with The Bourne Identity. It sort of like redefined the way that action films are made. It's a great spy film. You know, I think it's got a great concept to it. Matt Damon's fantastic. So is Clive Owen, who plays the villain in the film. I think he's very good. It has some really nice sort of like set pieces and a great sort of like tour around different countries as well. It's a really entertaining film. It can work as a popcorn film, but also as a intellectual film. And I think it's a good way to set up that series, which is so influential in terms of its like editing styles. I know with the Bourne Ultimatum, that won Best Editing at the Academy Awards for, a cut every 7 seconds or something. It was really revolutionary in quick cut cinema.
No film has been able to do it the same that, like, it works in the Bourne films, but no film has been able to replicate that style in a satisfying way, I don't think.
And for someone that doesn't sort of like action films, it wouldn't be something that I'd choose to watch normally. There's, you know, you come across them because they're sort of related to other genres or they've got specific styles. So like a Christopher Nolan is going to make an action film. So like, okay, there's something more worthwhile watching there. I'm not one to really do the leave the brain at the door kind of film. And I don't think this film is that film, which is sort of why I like it a lot. So it keeps you thinking, it keeps you moving, has a really entertaining sort of narrative to it. And pacing while also having great action sequences.
Alright, feel free to jump in, Isaac. Is it a bet? It's a battle.
So I'm going to recommend the 2011 film The Raid, directed by Welsh filmmaker Gareth Evans. I'd say alongside Mad Max Fury Road, the John Wick series, and maybe its sequel, The Raid 2, I think it's one of the best action films of the previous decade. I think why it's so good and why it's so like now kind of a modern classic in the genre is that the plot is very simple. All it is just a SWAT like team. I just need to infiltrate a drug lord in a tower block. Like, it's been done before. Like, even Dread the year after would do kind of a similar plot, even though it'd be more sort of comic book based. But even though the plot isn't like the most amazing thing, even though it is pretty solid and has a few interesting twists and turns, like the action that Gareth Evans does is just like, it's perfection. Like, it's long takes, wide shots. It's very much like old boys hallway fight scene sort of played out for an entire film. Like, sometimes it's one versus one or one versus two, but sometimes there are group like fights, and it is just so intense. Like, the action is just, it's just so kinetic. And what's interesting about Gareth Evans and his process is that even though it's an action film, very much clearly an action film, obviously maybe a crime film as well, it almost plays like a survival horror, because obviously later for Netflix he would make the film Apostle with Dan Stevens, which is maybe more of an action, more of a horror film than an action. But the tone of the film, of the first Raid movie, is very much like a survival horror film, because this SWAT team gets picked off one by one, and it just keeps going down and down the higher they go up the block. And again, there are twists and turns, there's corruption, there's, you know, I really recommend The Raid.
The other person wrong? Can anyone pull down Joe's argument?
I don't want to get character assassinate Joseph. Like, he's been I don't actually do that. I think the only thing I could say is that even though The Bourne Identity is a very good film, the only thing I could say that The Raid does is maybe it kind of lacks. Not that it's a bad thing. Like you saying, it works on different levels, Joseph, which is true, and it does that well. But I think The Raid is more of a pure action film. Like, it's kind of a very meat and potatoes sort of film. And I think that's what kind of works in The Raid's advantage on, like, a sequel, where it got much more elaborate and much more sort of complex in a good way. The Raid 2 is excellent. But the original Raid, it just gives you what you want. You want...
Do you have a rebuttal, like, Joseph? Really...
No, ultimately, it depends on what you're wanting from this genre, to be honest.
If either of you had said Dread, that might have been an instant winner, to be honest.
Well, I kind of said Dread. Dread is a very similar film. If you
I think I will give the point to Isaac on that one for The Raid. In this instance, that's the one I haven't seen, so technically following the gimmick that is recommending me it.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's 1 point to Isaac, but Joseph did a very good job as well. For horror, it's obviously, for me, my favourite horror film is The Thing, which I don't think is going to be a surprise to anyone. We've talked about it to death. Does anyone have another film they would like to recommend?
Yeah, should go first this time.
Okay, yeah. I'm going to recommend a film you can watch on BFI Player and maybe other places. I'm going to recommend Dario Argento's Suspiria. This is perhaps maybe my favourite horror film of all time. I think, again, the plot is, like The Raid, is quite simple. It's what it's really about is just an American ballet student who transfers to sort of a dance academy in Germany. But then realising after there's murders that take place, it's kind of... The academy is a front for maybe a supernatural conspiracy, you know, with witches and covens and all that sort of thing. But and also the film is entirely dubbed, which is hilarious, like into English. But why I think this film is so iconic, very, very much so, is for three key reasons. One, it's cinematography. It is maybe one of the most beautiful films, if not maybe the greatest horror shot horror film of all time. Like, it was one of the last films to be processed in Technicolor, so the film is just bathed in these sort of very primary and secondary colors, and they're not muted, they're very saturated, and they're very much in your face. You also have the sound design of the film, which is very, very exacerbating and brutal in your face, like especially when there's more horror scenes, because sometimes there's just conversations and they're normal, but the actual violent, more violent moments are just so, like, just blaring. And also, it has perhaps one of the most, the best horror, not just one of the best horror scores, one of the best film scores of all time by the band Goblin. Like, it's one of the only scores that I can think of where I could listen to it without not just listening to it just as background music, but like actually it doesn't need the film. Like, it could have been a great album on its own of instrumental or predominantly instrumental. And it's such a weird kind of fusion of all these different genres. Like, you have the very famous iconic theme, which is kind of very much like a fairy tale. A film that kind of runs on this kind of nightmare logic. Like, it doesn't run on sort of normal kind of, you know, like narrative perspective. But the soundtrack, it combines folk to opera like chants and synth-driven prog rock, avant-garde, even jazz fusion. It's all on the soundtrack. I don't know if it's on the film. It may not be, you may not think it's a great film, but it's a film, it's a horror film that never leaves you. And that will happen for a very long time afterwards. And I think it does offer the best of what Italian horror is. Even though the film is not straight up giallo, because giallo is more crime-based and this is more supernatural, it can be under the umbrella of giallo for a few reasons. But also just horror in the 1970s. It is one of the best horror films of all time. All right,
fantastic. That is a good recommendation. Joseph, what do you have to offer?
Completely of a scale to that. And it's a film that I recommend a lot on the show because I'm not a big horror person, but I'm sort of like infusing sort of my own taste with the direction of these genres, categories, and recommend Creep. Film starring Mark Duplass. I think in terms of like low budget kind of cinema, this is sort of like, it's really good in being something different than you would see in your standard like Duplass Brothers film or standard faux documentary or even like any kind of like improvised film, because you're sort of given this premise, you're sort of left in the woods with this guy who you just know is a creep, and that's sort of like all you know at the most of the film. You don't know much about him, you don't know what he's going to do for most of it, and that's when sort of like the twist comes into it later on, and then you see sort of like what it's all about. But it's just the idea of this guy being a creep and sort of like the unknown side of it. There's so much going on with this, that it's very, very stripped back. And if you like independent film like I do, then I feel like it offers something completely different to what you would normally have going in. There's comedic moments, there's satirical moments, and ultimately leaves you in this sort of like theory of, wait, what have I just seen here sort of thing. I think if you're wanting sort of like a complete direction to your standard 21st century jump scare horror kind of films, and you want something a bit more psychological, a bit more low key, and a bit more of a character study as well, than I think Creepy film.
Okay, very, very, very good. Neither of them are films that I've watched, but I'm kind of gonna go because I'll give the point to Joseph. I'll tell you why. I do really want to watch Suspiria, but it's more of a classic horror film that everyone talks about. So I'll let Joseph draw because he recommended something a bit different.
I do need to see the sequel as well. I think Creep 2 is out on Netflix as well.
Has he got similar good ratings?
Sort of, not as much because it isn't that kind of two-hander concept as the first one. Because the first one's sort of like a found footage kind of thing where it's sort of like a filmmaker making a documentary on he's being paid by Mark Duplass's character to make a documentary on him, so you see that footage sort of thing, rather than this where you sort of already know going in what he's capable of.
Well, you guys don't have as much time for this next section, next genre, which is I think fine. I don't think most people will complain about it, that, because it's rom-com, and I don't know that much about rom-com, so I've just said quite liked About Time, because with Domhnall Gleeson. Because it's good. Like, it's not just about being a rom-com, it's also about time, as it might suggest, but it's also it's about family as well, so it's somewhat a bit different. So in less than a minute each, recommend me a rom-com, and we'll start with Joseph this time.
Okay. So the rom-com I'm going to recommend is Enough Said. It's a small film by Nicole Holofcener, and it's sort of a very adult kind of rom-com in terms of sort of like to do with middle-aged people dealing with post-divorce and how you can sort of like get your life back on track with that respect. It's got a brilliant central performance by Julia Louis-Dreyfus, who's more known for TV work, but in the film which she does here, she's really, really good and really, really charming. And you also have a polar opposite performance you'd expect from him, from James Gandolfini in one of his final ever roles. He's so nice in this film. I think he's brilliant. He's just an absolute delight to see on screen all the time. I think if you want something that takes away sort of the cliches of romantic comedies and makes it more mature and more focused on sort of like the characters and rather than sort of like tropes, then this would be a good film to check out.
And what's his name?
Enough Said.
Enough Said. But will it be enough said? Isaac, what's your recommendation?
Yes, I'm going to recommend Paul Thomas Anderson's Punch Drunk Love. This is easily Paul Thomas Anderson's most successful film because he has the shortest runtime of 95 minutes. And it's pretty much a simple boy meets girl story, even though it is really idiosyncratic, a lot like PTA's other films. It stars Adam Sandler in possibly his greatest role next to Uncut Gems as Barry Egan, a psychologically troubled novelty supplier, nudged by one of his seven sisters towards a romance with Lena, played by Emily Watts, in one of her best roles. This happens while being extorted by a phone sex line run by a crooked mattress salesman, played by the late, great Philip Seymour Hoffman, and purchasing stunning amounts of pudding for air miles. While the film can deconstruct the rom-com, it's still very romantic and builds somewhat a unique...
No, you have to keep going. It's falling apart over there.
Damn it.
You're out of time. Wait, were you timing yourself?
Yeah, I was timing myself.
I'm sorry, Isaac. I'm afraid I'm going to give it to Joseph.
Yeah. Oh, it's a beginner's luck at the beginning, damn it. How could I disrespect Paul Thomas Anderson?
Well, don't you worry, Isaac, because as we go ahead, each round is going to be worth more points per film. 2 points this round, because we've narrowed it down. While we also narrow it down, the film I choose will also become, I think, more predictable.
Yeah. I was going to say more difficult for me to sort of like think of a quick alternative on the spot.
Sort of both at the same time.
Yeah.
So first up, genre number one for the narrow section, 2 points each. It is superhero films, and I, of course, have gone for The Dark Knight, which I've talked about extensively before.
Yeah, I thought you were going to go for what I was going to go for. Yeah.
What were you going to go for?
I won't say until it's my turn.
It is your turn.
Okay, I'm going to recommend, possibly on the opposite end of the superhero spectrum, Spider-Man 2. I would say alongside the first couple of Superman movies, this is perhaps maybe the best superhero movie in terms of sort of a lighter tone. I think it builds on the original Spider-Man, Sam Raimi Spider-Man, which was a very good film. But this is like maybe, you know, it is up there with the likes of The Dark Knight and Logan and first two Superman movies. Yeah. It's still a very mature and adult film, especially as it continues the plot line of the first movie and Green Goblin and Harry Osborn and all that sort of stuff. But it's sort of, apart from maybe Spider-Verse, it's the best representation of Spider-Man film. I think it's the thing that gets his character the most because it balances and it shows the conflict between Spider-Man, the superhero, and Peter Parker, the character. And the whole film is about him losing his powers and sort of having to deal with responsibility, whether it be at university or with his family or with his friends. Like, I am as much invested in the action scenes, like that iconic train sequence, which is just so good, as much as the actual drama of, let's say, Aunt May staying at home. And I think it also has one of the great villains in superhero films, with Alfred Molina playing Dr. Octopus, because you have time to see him him being good and then seeing his downfall and sort of seeing him, you know, go lower and lower and lower, but you still kind of understand where he comes from, even if you don't agree with it. And I think even though Sam Raimi is very much making a superhero blockbuster for all audiences, it still retains a lot of his unique voice, especially his horror roots, because there's a couple of Evil Dead references, especially in the hospital scene, and always is great to see Bruce Campbell in one of the Spider-Man movies, because he always makes a lovely cameo.
Yeah.
I'd say for all audiences, unlike The Dark Knight, which is maybe more adult audiences, this is just maybe one of the best films. One more sentence. It is overall a great pizza time.
Joseph, what's your recommendation?
A genre I'm too familiar with and choose not to, but this is a film I saw for the show. But basically, I think it's my first ever show I reviewed it on, and that's the Black Panther.
It might be, yeah, actually.
Yeah, the only superhero film to be nominated for Best Picture, I believe. Apart from if you're Joker, I don't know if you do as a superhero film.
Straight up superhero, Black Panther, yeah.
Yeah, and it did very well at the Oscars as well. It won original score and costume design, maybe production design as well, if I remember correctly. So in terms of that respect, it really sort of threw the flag for successful Marvel films in the 21st century. Obviously, with the success of Avengers and those kind of cinematic universe, the straight cinematic universe, the ones with loads of sequels and stuff, to go in a different direction and have a really good standalone film with a character that wasn't really too familiar to most audiences was very important. And in terms of representation, I think it did a big deal for sort of like the way that ethnic minorities are portrayed in the blockbuster universe sort of thing. Chadwick Boseman has been one of my favorite actors for a while, ever since like 42 and Get On Up back in 2014. To see him do something different is great to see, and he does a great job in the central role. Lupita Nyong'o is in it, who's brilliant as always. Forrest Whitaker in a supporting role, I love Forrest Whitaker. Any chance to see him on screen is great. So to see him in a superhero film is fantastic, and Michael B. Jordan as the villain is really good as well. Because there's sort of like two villains in the film. There's Andy Serkis, who's in half of it, and then you have Michael Jordan, Logan's in the second part. And I think both narratives go in a really good direction to keep it going. It has some really smart ideas in terms of sort of like the creations of the costumes and the vibranium. Sort of like the ideas they can use with that to create this world of Wakanda, which is really, really creative and really smart. I think it's a film that's sort of like been considered as worse than it did at the time. I think over time it's sort of like become less and less acclaimed because of people feeling, if that was so successful, why isn't my favourite superhero film more successful? But I feel like it was deserved at the time because of such waves it made in cinema. And I hope, forgive me, the director's name. Ryan Coogler continues to make as many great films as he has been doing with his first film.
All right, good recommendations. It's like classic superhero versus contemporary, and what it represents moving forward. Oh, I don't know. I actually don't know. I think I personally prefer Spider-Man 2, although I'm willing to admit that nostalgia plays a big part of that. It's very tempting to flip a coin, to be honest with you. I will go with Isaac. I'll go with Spider-Man 2, but I'll hold my hand up and I'll say nostalgia kind of won me over there. Sorry, Joseph.
Yeah, no worries. Nice, man.
Next up, Wild West films.
Yeah.
Deliberately very vague. I myself went with Django Unchained. So that's how broad. That's how broad the net is for this. It does not have to be a classic spaghetti western, although it could be. Joseph, do you want to go first?
Yes, I've gone very broad with this. I'm not a big fan of western.
Fair enough.
I've tried and failed. They're just, some of them are so long, and they're a slog as well. It's not like they feel long. So it's not something I choose to watch, but I think with the film I picked, it's sort of like a different version of the western, sort of a neo-western. I'm going to go with Hell or High Water.
Okay.
I talked about it a bit recently when we talked about the Best Picture winners, because it was nominated for Best Picture. Basically just on sort of word of mouth. It was a film that when it first came out, there was a lot of like love for it, but it wasn't sort of like critical love, but not, it wasn't sort of like excited as one of those films is going to be like around, talked about for the rest of the year. And it ended up doing so just basically on the strength of its of the film itself. It stars Chris Pine in probably his best performance, to be honest. Ben Foster, who's always great. He was in a real role around that time with the program and with Leave No Trace, some other brilliant films, and Jeff Bridges as well. He's a really good supporting performance. It's basically contrast those two. You've got two brothers. One of them's an ex-con, and they sort of like rob banks to fund their own fund their sort of like ranch they live on, and they're doing so far and avoid the police. So it's a really good sort of way of sort of combining the western and the crime film. It has a really good landscape to it. The Texan setting really works well for sort of the aesthetic style of the film, and it has some really exciting action set pieces. It has some really funny scenes in a different kind of not straightforward sense, but a sort of like subtle humor, which really benefits the film. And it has a good like cat and mouse dynamic to it, so I'd recommend Hell or High Water.
Nice one, Isaac.
I've sort of gone a bit broad, so I apologise if this is a bit of a controversial choice, but I'm going to go for Logan. I think this is maybe the last of the great superhero films. I don't think any superhero movie or western can top this, but enough about that. This is a film, really, with all its action and its superhero elements. It is a western at the end of the day, like boiling down to it. Like, it is a story about a person, Logan, who has to don the hat, the cowboy hat or the claws, one last time for the greater good of the community and the people close to him. He has to escort a person called Laura with his aging mentor, Charles Xavier, from Texas to North Dakota for Laura's safety. It's in a world where mutants and his kind have been left behind. It almost makes him an outlaw, like a cowboy. And the film really is a lot like a western, because it is about confronting your past, whether it be literal or metaphorical, and, you know, donning that hat one more time to end the violence that you created, indirectly or directly. It's bleak, it's brutal, it's sometimes very unforgiven. But I think there is a glimmer of hope, like all great westerns. There is sort of a glimmer of, like, there's a reason to have this bleakness, because it could show you can get out the mud. And also, it's just very, very heartfelt, and it is such a great conclusion to this character. I think it is the best X-Men film by far. And I think it also works very well as a western and as a companion piece to Children of Men. So yeah, I recommend Logan.
All right, very good choices. I have seen Logan, of course. So to be consistent, Joseph has won this round, because I have not seen Hell or High Water, and he does seem like a very good film. I promise you, I'm not deliberately going back and forth.
Yeah, it seems a bit like that, Jamie.
So far, just reminding myself, Oh wait, no. Joseph won two in a row.
Yes.
So I'm not going back and forth.
No. Spider-Man 2 won superhero.
Because Isaac is on 3 and Joseph is on 4.
I'm on 4 because I won 2 in the first.
That's one. Right. Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah.
I thought just like trading for a second there. Fair enough. We're on track then. Next genre is time travel films. Extremely broad. I've already said what is technically a time travel film. But for this specific genre, I'm going to recommend Back to the Future, obviously. We were talking about Robert Zemeckis last week. Whose turn is it? Isaac? It's Joseph, isn't it?
No worries.
Yeah.
No.
Wait, no, it's Isaac. Yeah, go ahead. Go ahead, Isaac. Okay. Sorry.
I'm going to go for the 1962 short film La Jete. I think this is the greatest. L A J E T double E. It means the pier. I think this is easily the greatest science fiction, not the greatest time travel story. It's about a prisoner after World War III who's experimented on by scientists, and they force him to go forwards and backwards in time to rescue the present, maybe find a cure or something. It's kind of known for its American remake, 12 Monkeys by Terry Gilliam. And what makes this short interesting that it's almost entirely told through still photographs. And like 12 Monkeys, it very much is it has its ode to Alfred Hitchcock. In fact, some ways, La Jete is a very loose remake of Vertigo. It's not just its imagery, but it's also very thematically sort of rich with ideas of memory, nostalgia, passion, obsession. And it's just done this through haunting imagery, its sort of soundscape and its sound design, which clashes industrial sounds with very natural and elemental sounds. And also a very excellent score by Trevor Duncan, who sort of echoes sort of Bernard Herrmann's score for Vertigo. So if you're a fan of time travel, or if you're a fan of Hitchcock, I highly recommend La Jete.
Is that the 1962?
Yes, 1962 short film. I think it's the only short film on the BFI's Sight and Sound's top 50 films of all time. I think it's number 50 or top 50. Yeah, I think it's the only one.
Joseph.
Completely other scale. I'm gonna go as lowbrow as it gets, sort of like in terms of like accessibility. I'm gonna go for an animated film, and the film's called Mr. Peabody and Sherman.
Okay.
It's a film about a boy and a dog, a really clever dog that creates this wayback machine to endeavor and fix a crime. A time that they created. And in doing so, they go back through history and to lots of different countries, interacting with a load of historical figures. And it's a really, really fun film. It's got Todd Burrell and Stephen Colbert in the main roles, and they're really sort of like really insane. It's sort of like got like a Jimmy Neutron kind of look to it, but it's sort of got the accessibility of a Disney film, but a bit more creative and a lot more ideas. I think in terms of if you're looking for humour in a time travel film, then this is a good example of this. And also for teaching kids about geography and about history, I think it'd be a really really good way to do so. I mean, animated films are sometimes criticised for being, well, sort of DreamWorks ones. I don't think less so like the modern Disney and modern Pixar films. But it's sort of like DreamWorks is sort of like supposed to be sort of like the dumb humor sort of things and childish kind of levels of humor, but I think it does it in really smart ways, this film, because it has like historical humor is not really my thing, but I think the way that it creates these historical characters and interactions with people like the Wright brothers and Cleopatra and Tutankhamun and things like that, you know, the different places they go and different historical figures they interact with, I think make it a really insane film, and it's pretty short, about 80 minutes, so it's really worth checking out if you get the opportunity.
They're both good suggestions. I haven't seen either of them, but I will watch both of them at some point. I think it's fair enough to go with Isaac's on this one, because what did you say? It's on the top 50 BFI. Was it top 50 BFI films?
Yeah, Sight and Sound.
I'll go with Isaac on this one. It's fine. Joseph's not too far behind. It's 5-4.
Okay. Can turn this around, come back on board.
Because each one next round is going to be worth 3 points, so I'm looking forward to that. And now for 3 points each, both Isaac and Joseph is going to recommend me a film from each of these categories. Starting off with dark fantasy, which is a very, it's a subgenre of fantasy which focuses on the more horrific elements of it. There's normally an element of what's the word I was looking for? It's sort of like folk tales, that sort of thing. So yeah. It can be quite nightmarish, can be quite horrific, but they can also be used for family films. Because technically, Hellboy counts as a dark fantasy. It's both a vague and obscure genre at the same time, which is why I'm so fascinated in it. And you'll see it a lot. It sort of crops. I don't want to say any more films. I can give my recommendations after this category, though, if people are still confused about what dark fantasy is. But, Isaac, what is your recommendation?
Yes, I'm going to recommend the film Mandy. It's set in our world, but it's set in a heightened version of our world. The film is about a man called Red, played by Nicolas Cage, who must go on an odyssey to take revenge on the brutal murder and assault of his partner, the title Mandy, played by Angela Riseborough. And he goes for all sorts of things, sort of mutant type biker cult. He goes against biker gang, but also a cult who obviously viciously murdered his wife. Even though the film is like all great fantasy and fairy tales, this mythical world is sort of grounded by very believable characters and ideas. Like Suspiria, it's very bathed in sort of deep, saturated primary and secondary colors. And there's a great scene where Nicolas Cage just screams and shouts in grieving and mourning over his partner. Just for, like, in an unbroken 2-minute take in a bathroom, and it is just really horrifying. And the sort of more action orientated sequences and the horror orientated sequences are just beyond description. So I won't go into spoilers. And I think it features one of the last scores by Johan Johansson, which is sort of a mixture of it's you would call synth metal, which died that year, and the film is dedicated to. So I highly recommend it if you want a mixture of dark fantasy and horror, and if you want Nicolas to be out of the cage.
All right, yeah, fantastic. That is a very good. I think I'd say that counts as a very good example. I do want to clarify, I am referring to the Ron Perlman Hellboy from the 2000s, not the recent remake.
No, there's only two Hellboy movies, live action Hellboy movies.
Joseph.
All right, I'm going to go for a recent film, well, a couple of years ago, by J.A. Bayona called A Monster Calls. It's sort of like a British set film, but I'd consider it to be sort of like a Roald Dahl meets Guillermo del Toro kind of combination. It's about a boy who seeks help of a tree monster to cope with his single mother's terminal illness, and it's sort of about this idea of letting go and dealing with impending grief. I think it's a really beautiful film. It's dark in places in terms of the themes it looks at. But also very grounded as well. It's very sort of down to earth and very sort of like, I don't know how to describe it, sort of like localized sort of thing. So you get it as it gets it as a universal story. It's sort of like the Spanish inflection of sort of the cinematography styles and the creation of the monster who's played by Liam Neeson in the film is brilliant, because it's sort of like done as sort of slightly scary, but also comforting. It combines sort of like visual effects and very simplistic direction and editing, and with these tales, because the whole point is sort of like the monster tells the young boy Connor three tales, and he in return tells him his nightmare so he can get over it.
Is it like anthology almost?
Yeah, sort of. And so those tales are like animated in sort of like watercolors. It has a very strong art inflection, because it's about a boy who he's sort of like tells the story of the monster through through drawings. So in terms of sort of like playing a, in terms of creating an emotional deep down story, it does it incredibly well, but it also has those dark fantasy elements to it, which makes it fitting for a whole multitude of genres. And I think it's very important to be teaching teaching younger audiences about their feelings, sort of things. I wish it had done better when it first came out, and I think that if it had been rated PG, it would have done a lot better than it actually did. But I do think it's a very important emotional film.
Very good. Okay, they're both films that I'm probably going to watch. All right, let's do it like this. Joseph, very quickly, IMDb or Rotten Tomatoes?
Rotten Tomatoes.
Sorry, and Mandy wins. Wow. They both had higher scores on either of them two things.
I don't like IMDb because it's always like inflicted by like fandoms and stuff, voting things 1 out of 10 or 10 out of 10.
It had a 1.5 higher rating on IMDb. Monster Calls did, but right. Mandy has a higher rating on Rotten Tomatoes. So that would have got you the win.
Yeah, that's fair. Because I think Monster Calls is the kind of film that appeals more with audiences than critics.
Oh, nice. I actually do really want to watch that. But Isaac gets the point on that round. But it's still all to play for. Because now... Yeah. So I should say Isaac's on 8, Joseph's on 4.
Yeah.
You can still pull it around though, Joseph. You're fighting for improvisation, remember?
Oh, I don't have faith in these last two.
So our next category, basically Guillermo del Toro films are dark fantasy, Shape of Water and Pan's Labyrinth.
Yeah, Shape of Water was going to be the other alternative I was going to go for, but I've talked about that enough on the show.
It's fair enough, they're both very good films.
Yeah.
Good cat, you see why I like this category now. Next up, live action, animation, hybrid. For me, there's only one, this is why the more points each, because there aren't as many in the genre, and not much can top Who Framed Roger Rabbit, which for me is the ultimate live action. And everyone thinks of Space Jam, but another. I think this is another Robert Zemeckis film, I believe.
Yeah, it is. Yeah,
yeah. Who also did Back to the Future. Yeah, I love this film. It's probably one of the greatest family films of all time. If you're interested in that sort of, in the idea behind it, I'd say watch it without any more spoilers. Joseph.
Yeah. So the film I'm gonna go for is a film that isn't really a live action animated hybrid, but it's sort of like a mostly animated film, but it does have live action in it, so I'm gonna count it. Gonna go for the Lego Movie.
Oh yeah, I guess that.
it's a closing scene with Will Ferrell in it.
Yeah, it does.
And I think that was pointed out as the reason why it didn't get a Best Animated Feature nomination, even though it had enough percentage-wise for to count as an animated film, because it has those things. It sort of like went against sort of like the ethics of the category. But it's a fantastic film if you get the opportunity. It's really fun. It's got Chris Pratt in the leading role as Emmett. And they go sort of on this adventure thing. I need to check the plot because I haven't seen it in a long time. But I remember really enjoying it when I saw it at the time.
Absolutely.
About an ordinary Lego construction worker thought to be prophesied as special is recruited to join a quest to stop an evil tyrant from glowing the Lego universe in eternal status. And it's got these great performances in it, and these cameos playing characters that you think you know before, sort of like Will Arnett as Batman. You've got Zach Galif. No, is that Galif? No, sorry, I'm thinking Lego Batman movie there. But you have Liam Neeson, that was it, as the Good Cop, Bad Cop, sort of like created through the animation style of that they use with the Lego characters, being able to spin their head around and have two different expressions. So it's really creative in that respect. You have Will Ferrell as both a voice and a live-action performance as Lord Business, sort of like coming to overtake sort of the universe. It has a great soundtrack as well. The classic song from The Lonely Island, "Everything Is Awesome," Which did get nominated for an Oscar. That's weird, but it really hit waves at the time. It's a shame that the second one was sort of like not really cared for it too much. I haven't just got around to seeing it at all, the second part, but I think the Lego movie did something very different. Phil Miller and Chris Miller and Phil Lord, who also did the Jump Street films, and they sort of like changed the way the comedy is made in the 21st century, and I think Lego movies has a big part of that, and it's one of those films that's going to be accessible for both young and old, so definitely check it out.
All right, very good, Isaac.
I'm going for the live-action animated masterpiece, Space Jam, right? This is why Space Jam is the greatest film of all time. It is both a time capsule of 1996 and both timeless. It has a very complex and engaging plot, fully developed characters, excellent acting by both the Looney Tunes and Michael Jordan, which may be the best performance given by a basketball player, hilarious comedy, tense drama on and off the court, and how could I forget? You know, the near-perfect soundtrack with only one exception. The song's theme tune by the Quad City DJs is possibly the greatest song of all time. It makes up for any blemishes that are on that soundtrack album, which is very little. You know, it's beloved by audiences. It's acclaimed by critics with the likes of Siskel and Ebert, guys. They gave it a thumbs up. This is the timeless classic. That's just a lightning in a bottle. Not just for cinema, but the entire world. It is up there in terms of representing America the same way The Godfather is, Citizen Kane, Casablanca, There Will Be Blood. You know, it is a pinnacle of late 20th century cinema. And that's why I recommend Space Jam. It is just out of this world.
I don't know.
May I also point out the fact that the film was animated by Corey Coleman, the great Corey Coleman of Double Toasted and Spill.com fame?
I'll tell you what, because it's 8-4, I'm gonna give the 3 points to Joseph on this one.
How could you disrespect Space Jam, Jamie?
I don't know. It's still a pretty good choice, Isaac. Still a pretty good choice, but I do like Joseph thinking out of the box with this one, and I could have also said Space Jam myself. I should have ruled out Space Jam.
That's cheating. About Space Jam.
It's almost cheating.
Did you know I would say that?
And also, it overshadows Who Framed Roger Rabbit. So
going down to the Space Jam.
So it's 8-7. It's 8-7 to Isaac. You're still winning, and that makes this last round. This makes this last round very interesting. I did have a tiebreaker prepared, but I don't know if we'll have time for any of that. So we'll just play this forward with 3 points for the win. What is a space opera you could recommend? I obviously went for the classic of the genre, which is Star Wars. It's the ultimate example of a space opera, this kind of fantasy adventure in space that builds its own universe and its own rules almost. What have you gone with, Isaac?
I've gone for the cult classic Flash Gordon. Unlike a lot of space operas, including Star Wars, Flash Gordon doesn't really take itself seriously, doesn't really get bogged down in the politics of the world it's created. It is just generally a fun time with the family, even though weirdly has a lot of softcore porn elements to it.
Eh?
Yeah, if you rewatch the film, there's a lot of sort of, it's very erotic in places, which is really awkward, but it's still a pretty great film. pretty much Flash Gordon and a couple of others go into space, to another sort of galaxy, in order to save the Earth from the evil Emperor Ming, played by the late, great Max von Sydow. There's character, there's the likes of Brian Blessed, Gordon's alive, and a very young Timothy Dalton, and explores all different worlds and places. The production design, like you expect from a space opera, is just top notch. Fun action scenes, a fantastic score by Queen, you know, the iconic Flash theme, very vibrant and saturated. And you know what makes this one of the best films of all time? A film is 10 out of 10 when it's got a freeze frame as the ending of the movie. What other movie has a freeze frame? No other movie. Flash Gordon.
You could have left that part out. Joseph.
This was one I struggled on. This isn't my genre at all. I mean, I'm making this excuse for most of them, but this really is the case of this. I'm going going to go with a film I watched for this show. It's not for this specific show, but I mean the film show in general.
Yeah.
You know, it is a true classic of the genre. What? And very influential in terms of space film.
What did you say, Joseph?
Alien.
Alien?
Yeah. So, it's got a great performance by Sigourney Weaver. I was a big fan of that. And there's that iconic scene with John Hurt and the alien coming out of his chest. So, in terms of visual effects, it was very influential in that aspect. It has a narrative that gets quicker and quicker pace as it goes along. Even if you think it ends, it doesn't. It's got a cat in it, which is always a bonus. And yeah, it's got some good cinematography, great ideas, and it's a very definition of the genre in terms of creating a narrative solely set in space. So, and sort of like with that comes the sort of like cramped kind of elements that make it more intense. So I'll stick with Alien.
I'm trying to think if Alien counts as a space opera in terms of...
It's operatic, but power. It's not an opera.
If Isaac, would you count it as a space opera?
Sadly, I'm going to have to say no. I would consider it more of a sci-fi horror film.
But I was basing it on your definition of it before.
Yeah, it's not wrong, and it is the better film.
This is only my opinion, by the way.
But and it's not... have a whole host of other ideas I can give.
Is there anything else you'd like to put forward off the top of your head?
No. I don't like this genre.
It's fair enough.
I'm willing to give the points away.
Fight for it, Joseph. Come on, don't make this too easy.
We do have... I'll give the points to Isaac. So it's 11-7. If either of you can pitch a better film for a random genre I'm going to throw out, then I'll just give you the win because the points don't matter.
Okay.
It's all about... Isaac, you have won that portion. Well done. Well done, Isaac. You are a winner. But I will also give bonus points to anyone that can recommend me a steampunk film in the last minute we have left.
Oh, what steampunk movies are there?
Yeah, I know. That was going to be the tiebreaker. Just
Mortal
to finish
Engines?
Up.
I haven't even seen that film. steampunk films. I got nothing. I can't think of any steampunk films aside from Mortal Engines.
Joseph, can you think of it?
No, don't even know what it is.
So how would you describe steampunk? Oh, wow. It's like that 20th century engineering and industry.
Yeah, Hugo, Martin Scorsese's one.
Yeah, that does count, right?
Yeah. That's a great
I'm
going to
say Wild Wild West with Will Smith and
Kevin. Don't. All right, minus 11 points, as it was.
Oh, that's totally worth it.
All right, yeah, very good. I do think, Isaac won, but I do want to say that I believe, in terms of arguing the point, Joseph made the best case for improvisation for the most part.
Yeah, he's better improvised.
Yeah, I think Isaac...
No prep.
Yeah, you did very well considering.
I did 5 minutes last night, I think, just listing a couple of names. So.
Fair enough, that's pretty much why I did.
Yeah. Hard on this show.
Isaac got tripped up a couple of times reading his script out.
How dare you? You made me disrespect Punch Drunk Love. How dare you?
All right, thank you all for coming on this week. Very good show and very good recommendations. And next week, there's something you guys are wanting to review, which is...
The Lovebirds. We're back on the new releases, lads.
Oh, very good. Time is back to moving forward.
Film show of old, you know.
And I'll thank you all for listening.